Welcome to Base by Base. Today we're doing a deep dive into something pretty fascinating in our genes, the evolutionary story of a specific genetic change called the CCR5 Delta 32 deletion.
Right, and this isn't just some obscure genetic detail. This variant, CCR5 Delta 32, it's actually quite well known. It's famous mainly because it gives people resistance to HIV-1 infection. But the backstory, you know, where it came from, when it popped up, and why it's common in some places but not others, that's been debated by scientists for, well, quite a while.
Exactly. For ages, it felt like every study trying to pin down the history of CCR5 Delta 32 came up with a completely different answer. You had estimates for how old it was, ranging from, like, only a few hundred years ago back to thousands and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And the reasons for why it's so common, particularly in Europe, theories were all over the place. Maybe protection against something like the Black Death.
Yeah.
Or maybe just random luck, genetic drift, or, you know, something else entirely. It was a genuine puzzle.
Yeah, it really was. And a part of the difficulty you have to remember is working with ancient DNA. It's often degraded, broken into tiny pieces, which makes spotting specific things like this deletion quite hard, especially when it's in parts of the genome with repetitive sequences. That makes mapping those little DNA fragments accurately a real challenge.
So you've got conflicting results from looking at people today, and then these technical hurdles with the ancient samples, the whole picture was just fuzzy.
Very fuzzy. But that's exactly where this recent study we're looking at today comes in. It offers a much, much clearer picture.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so our deep dive is based on some really groundbreaking research. It was published just this year, 2025, in the journal Cell. The first author is Christine Raven, working together with her colleagues, and they really decided to tackle this problem head on using some new methods and just a huge amount of ancient DNA data, an unprecedented amount, really.
And their work gives us, maybe for the first time, a really complete story.
Yeah.
Not just the deletion is there, but its whole evolutionary path through time and space.
Hmm.
So yeah, let's get into how they cracked this mystery.
Okay, so the first really key insight they had actually came from looking closely at genomes of people living today. They figured out that the CCR5 Delta 32 deletion, it doesn't just float around on its own. It's usually found embedded within a specific genetic background, like a larger chunk of DNA that gets inherited together. We call that a haplotype.
Okay.
And they found three main haplotypes in this region of the genome. There's haplotype A, which has the CCR5 Delta 32 deletion, plus a whole bunch of other nearby variants. Then there are haplotypes B and C, which look pretty similar, but crucially, they don't have the deletion.
Right. So instead of just hunting for that single deletion, they realized that if you find CCR5 Delta 32, you almost always find it packaged together with all these other markers on haplotype A.
Exactly. That's the key. And they also found pretty strong evidence that haplotype A, the one with the deletion, actually evolved from haplotype B. Understanding this genetic neighborhood, this haplotype context, was crucial because it gave them a whole new angle for finding the deletion in ancient DNA.
Okay, but ancient DNA is still difficult, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned it's low coverage, fragmented, damaged. How did knowing about the haplotype help them get around those problems?
Right. So this is where their really clever new method comes in. It's called HAPI. That stands for Haplotype Aware Probabilistic Model for indels. Indels are insertions or deletions, like CCR5 Delta 32. The basic idea is, since you often don't get enough ancient DNA reads directly covering the deletion spot itself to be sure, HAPI uses the presence of those other nearby markers, specific single letter changes, SNPs that are known to be on haplotype A.
Using those linked SNPs as sort of guideposts or clues.
Precisely. HAPI uses the likelihood of finding those specific tag SNPs, which are much easier to spot even in fragmented DNA, as a kind of strong hint or prior probability that the deletion is probably there too, even if the direct evidence is weak. It cleverly combines the information from those tag SNPs with whatever limited direct evidence you do have from reads mapping near the deletion. It even maps the reads against two different reference genomes, one with the deletion, one without, to avoid potential mapping biases.
Hmm.
Think of it like putting together a jigsaw puzzle with some damaged pieces. The tag SNPs are like the edge pieces. They tell you the overall picture, the shape of the haplotype, and that makes it much easier to figure out where that tricky deletion piece goes, even if that piece itself is a bit mangled.
That sounds like a really smart way to get more reliable information out of noisy ancient DNA data. Did they test how well HAPI actually works?
Oh yeah, they tested it thoroughly. They benchmarked it against the standard tools people usually use for finding variants, things like JDK haplotype caller, and also a graph genome method called VG. And HAPI really outperformed them, especially at the super low DNA coverage levels you often get with ancient samples.
How much better?
Well, for instance, at coverage between 0.5x and 1x, which is pretty low, where the other methods really struggled, HAPI could still correctly identify the deletion status in about 90% of their simulated test samples. That's a really significant improvement.
Okay, so they built a much better mousetrap, essentially. What did they use it on? What data did they analyze?
They pointed HAPI at a huge data set. We're talking 934 ancient human genomes from all across Eurasia. These samples spanned a massive time frame, from ancient hunter-gatherer periods right up through the Viking Age. It's genuinely one of the biggest ancient DNA datasets ever applied to track down a single functional variant like this one.
Wow.
And they didn't just look at the past. They also included data from over 2,500 present-day genomes to kind of connect the ancient patterns to what we see now.
Right, connecting the dots. Okay, so armed with this powerful HAPI tool and this enormous dataset, what did they actually find? Where did CCR5 Delta 32 first appear, and when?
Okay, so applying their strict criteria, they managed to identify the CCR5 Delta 32 deletion in 39 of the ancient individuals. And the oldest confirmed positive sample they found came from a site called Protoka, which is in modern-day Russia. That individual dates back to about 5,800 years ago.
5,800 years ago, okay.
Yeah. They also found it in someone from the Yamnaya culture in Kazakhstan around 4,900 years ago, and significantly, they detected it in individuals in Denmark going back over 4,000 years ago, and then again in the Bronze Age there, too.
So that's way older than some of those previous estimates, the ones that put it maybe only 700 years old.
Much older, yeah.
And interestingly, it's showing up early on in that whole Western Eurasian steppe region, not just appearing first in, say, Central or Northern Europe.
Exactly. That seems to be the early hotspot. Mm. And they also confirmed, looking at the other haplotypes, B and C, the ones without the deletion, that those were even older and much more widespread across Eurasia. They found those precursor haplotypes in samples dating back over 10,000 years, which fits nicely with the idea that haplotype A, the one carrying the deletion, arose out of haplotype B in a particular place and time.
Okay, so we have a clearer timeline now in a geographic origin. What did that tell them about how common the allele became over time? Was its frequency just bouncing around randomly, or did something push it?
This is where it gets really exciting, I think. They used some sophisticated population genetics modeling, a method called CLUES is one they mentioned, to actually reconstruct how the frequency of the CCR5 Delta 32 allele changed through time. And the results were really striking. They saw a clear, pretty rapid increase in how common the allele was, starting roughly 8,000 years ago and continuing up until about 2,000 years ago. After that point, the frequency seemed to level off and stabilize.
A rapid rise like that over several thousand years, that almost always signals positive selection, doesn't it? Something must have been favoring people who carried it.
It strongly suggests it, yes. And they went further. They found statistically significant evidence for strong positive selection acting on this allele during that specific ancient period between about 8,000 and 2,000 years ago.
Strong selection.
Yeah, the estimated selection coefficient was quite high. Definitely strong enough to drive that kind of rapid frequency change we see in the data. And just to be sure this wasn't some kind of statistical artifact or something weird about that spot on the chromosome, they did a clever control experiment. They ran the same selection analysis on 7 other deletions located on the same chromosome, deletions with similar genetic characteristics.
No.
And none of those other deletions showed any sign of selection. Zero. Which really makes the specific strong selection signal for CCR5 Delta 32 stand out. It looks very real.
Wow. Okay. That really seems to lock down the idea that selection was driving its frequency up back then. Now, you mentioned it appeared early in the steppe region, and we know there were huge population movements out of the steppe later on. Did the study manage to connect this selection signal to any specific ancient populations or ancestries?
Yes, they did. They performed what's called an ancestry stratified analysis. Basically, looking at the selection signal within different genetic ancestry components present in the ancient individuals, and this showed that the positive selection signal was strongest, most pronounced in the ancestry components that are linked to those really large-scale migrations out of the steppe region during the early Bronze Age. Specifically, ancestry related to Eastern hunter-gatherers, or EHG, and Caucasus hunter-gatherers, CHG.
So the selective advantage, whatever it was, wasn't necessarily uniform across all of Europe, but maybe was particularly strong within those migrating groups carrying step-related ancestry or their direct ancestors.
That's what the ancestry data seems to point towards. They also used another cool method, a spatiotemporal model, to kind of visualize how the allele spread across the map over time. And this model, again, inferred the origin to be in the Western Eurasian steppe. It showed the allele spreading rapidly over long distances, both east and west, primarily before 2,000 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And the selection strength estimated by the spatial model was also really high in that earlier period and then dropped off significantly more recently, which matches perfectly with what the frequency analysis showed.
That paints a really cohesive picture, linking the genetics directly to those major human migrations during the late Neolithic and Bronze Age.
Very neat.
Did they also address any potentially confusing findings from previous work? Sometimes older studies can muddy the waters, right?
They did, yeah. They specifically looked at one recent study that had tried to use a single SNP, RS73833030333, as a stand-in, a proxy, for the CCR5 Delta 32 deletion itself. But Raven and her colleagues showed pretty clearly that this particular SNP, RS73833030303, it's actually found on haplotypes B and C as well, the ones without the deletion. It's not exclusive to haplotype A.
Ah, so it's not a reliable marker for the deletion at all.
Not on its own, no. And its frequency patterns across different populations just don't match the known distribution of CCR5 delta 32. So it really highlights a potential pitfall in genetic studies. If you rely on inaccurate proxies, you can end up drawing the wrong conclusions about evolution and selection.
Right, that makes sense. Okay, so this study seems to really clarify the origin, the age, the timing of the frequency increase, and provides clear evidence for positive selection tied to these ancient migrations. Let's pull back a bit and talk about the discussion. What does all this mean for our big picture understanding of this important gene variant?
Well, I think this paper gives us the most definitive story of CCR5 Delta 32's evolution that we've ever had, really. By figuring out that haplotype signature and then applying their new HAPI method to all of that ancient DNA, they've managed to resolve many of the contradictions and fuzzy points from earlier research.
So they've pinpointed the origin, Western Eurasian steppe, at least 6,700 years ago. That pushes the minimum age back quite a bit and refines where it likely started.
Correct. And finding that the rapid spread and the strong selection happened much earlier, mainly during the late Neolithic and Bronze Age, that really doesn't fit well with older ideas that maybe, say, the Black Death in medieval times or even Viking movements were the main things driving its frequency up. The timing is just wrong.
Right. Instead, the timing lines up almost perfectly with those major expansions from the steppe into Europe. It suggests that the populations carrying that EHG and CHG ancestry brought the allele with them. They experienced strong selection pressure for some reason, and as they moved and mixed, the allele spread.
Exactly, and it fits into a wider pattern that we're increasingly seeing from ancient DNA studies. It seems immune-related genes were often under really strong selection, especially during times of big societal shifts. Think about the adoption of farming or these large-scale migrations. Those things could have led to denser populations, maybe new exposures to pathogens, creating new selective pressures.
And the study identified that selection happened and when, but the why, the specific disease or environmental factor, that's still an open question, right? As it often is with ancient selection.
Yeah, precisely. It might not have been just one single disease. It could have been ongoing pressure from various pathogens that were common back in the late Neolithic or Bronze Age. Or maybe it wasn't just about disease resistance. Maybe it was related to broader changes in immune function connected to new diets, new lifestyles that came along with farming or herding. It's usually a complex interplay between genes, environment, and pathogens.
Beyond just the deep history, you mentioned earlier, this has implications for the medical side of CCR5 Delta 32 too.
It really does. Finding that the deletion is almost always stuck on this specific haplotype A, which carries, I think they said, 86 other linked genetic variants, that adds a whole new layer of complexity.
How so?
Well, while the deletion itself is almost certainly the main reason for the HIV resistance, the paper makes a really important point. Some of those other variants hitchhiking along on haplotype A have been linked in other studies to different traits. Things related to CCR5's known pleiotropy, you know, its effects on other things like autoimmune conditions, inflammatory bowel disease, maybe even Alzheimer's risk.
Ah, so the complete package of health effects we might see in someone with CCR5 Delta 32 might not just be due to the deletion itself. It could be subtly influenced by the specific genetic background it's traveling with on that haplotype.
That's exactly the suggestion. Even if those other 86 variants don't have huge effects on their own, just being there on the same haplotype could potentially tweak the expression or function of other nearby genes like related chemokine receptors, CCR3 or CCR2, or another gene called CCRL2. And that could subtly alter the downstream signaling pathways that CCR5 is involved in, which might then impact those other health outcomes, for better or worse.
That seems really important for anyone thinking about therapies targeting CCR5, whether it's for HIV or maybe other conditions, using gene editing, for example. They really need to think about this wider genetic context, not just, is the deletion there, yes or no?
Absolutely. Understanding these intricate genotype, haplotype, phenotype connections is going to be crucial if we want to accurately predict the full range of effects, both the good ones and any potential downsides of messing with CCR5 therapeutically.
And one last point, connecting the ancient story to today, the paper also shed light on why we sometimes find CCR5 Delta 32 in non-European populations, right?
Yes, exactly. They confirm that when you see CCR5 Delta 32 and its associated haplotype A segments in populations today, say in Latin America, it's basically explained by admixture gene flow from European populations, mostly after Columbus.
Okay.
They even suggest that CCR5 Delta 32 itself, and maybe a couple of those tightly linked tag SNPs on haplotype A, could actually be quite useful genetic markers for tracing European ancestry components in populations that have mixed ancestry. And finding fragments of the other haplotypes B and C in admixed groups might also point towards admixture in evolving populations with African ancestry, where those haplotypes are more common.
So wrapping things up, this study using this combination of ancient DNA, haplotype context, and the new API method, it really feels like it's rewritten the definitive history of the CCR5 Delta 32 allele.
I think it has. It firmly places its origins in the Western Eurasian steppe thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
It provides really solid evidence for positive selection driving it up during those key Neolithic and Bronze Age migrations. And it clarifies how it spread, kind of debunking some of the older, less supported hypotheses along the way.
And the power of their approach, especially HPI dealing with low coverage ancient DNA, combined with that huge data set, seems to be what finally broke the deadlock on those long running debates.
For sure. It gives us the clearest picture we've ever had of this really important allele's journey through human prehistory and history. And it's a great reminder, too, that even genetic variants we think we know well can have hidden layers of complexity, like the role of the surrounding haplotype, that turn out to be really critical for understanding their full impact, both on our past and on our health today.
Yeah, this work really highlights how much we're still learning about human adaptation, about our long dance with diseases, just by looking deeper into the DNA of people who lived thousands of years ago. It definitely makes you wonder what other fascinating stories about how our genomes were shaped are still waiting there, hidden in ancient bones, waiting for the right tools and questions to bring them to light.
Absolutely. Every piece of our genome has a history, shaped by forces acting over immense timescales. It's quite profound when you think about it.
This deep dive was based on an open access article published under a CC BY 4.0 license. The DOI and the license link are available in the description.